And now for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Welcome to Shout Out, oh fair queer folk.
On this week's show,
Stephen Fry introduces us to queer theatre and we chat to the man running it, Andrew Keats, on sex, drugs, alcohol and theatre.
Plus some cracking tracks, news, views and chat.
All right here in the next hour on Shout Out. The interview sounds incredibly interesting and I'm really, really looking forward to listening to it. What was it like for you to speak with Andrew?
It was good. The Stephen Fry thing, we did try the agents to get Stephen Fry on the show, but his agents are quite tight on who he talks to. He'll only talk to people who've got listeners in millions like Graham Norton. So instead of his agents not allowing us to have a live interview, they got Stephen to do a message for us. So we've got that as an intro to queer theatre. But I had a really interesting chat with Andrew Keats, and it turned out to be so much more than just about queer theatre. And it became very deep and quite meaningful, hence it's quite a long chat. And there's so much in there of interest to a lot of people.
Sounds fascinating, doesn't it, Terry?
It does indeed. A good way to spend the 19th birthday of our home station, BCFM.
Yay, happy birthday,
birthday to you.
19 years on the air, and yep. We must be starting to plan things for the 20th anniversary.
Yeah, so
year.
Pat, if you're listening, one would like you and your wonderful family to make some of your wonderful, wonderful food. And if you could start writing the menus now.
Yep. We can have a good old knees up. Have a gay old time.
Oh, well, if we're there.
Grab the piano.
Let's do some get well soons as well, eh?
Yeah, Andy and Arby aren't very well, no. So hence they're not here. So get well soon, both.
Yes.
You're not too well either, Terry.
He had a slip, trip and fall.
Ez is feeling exhausted.
Yes.
And Tara's on the rugby run, so there was going to be a shortage.
Indeed, but the show must go on, and hopefully all those lovely lot will be back next week. And now...
Yeah, moving swiftly on.
Take it away,
The Shout Out Podcast.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
Tell you what, I am so proud to be connected, even in my own small way, to queer theatre, because what Andrew and his team are doing is simply fantastic. There's an amazing season coming up of new queer playwrights in all directions, providing exquisitely new voices in all kinds of theatres of queer life. It's very exciting. And there's Love is Gods and Monsters, which is a very charmingly named exercise in the exposition of the wondrously queer Greek myths. They're always so thrilling. Maybe that's what appealed to me about them when I was a child, and why I then later went on to write 4 books about Greek myths, because they always contained this sort of juice, this sexiness, this ambivalence, this freedom of thought and sexuality, which frankly when I was growing up was a rare thing. But I didn't grow up at the time of queer theatre. I wish I had. Anyway, I do hope you'll look at the programme and support this amazing venture. Lots of love.
Right, we've just heard from Stephen Fry about queer theatre, and now we're going to be talking to the person on the ground doing all the work, Andrew Keats. Welcome to Shout Out.
Thank you.
Before we get into queer theatre and what you're up to now, let's take you back. How did you actually get into theatre?
How did I get into theatre? That's actually quite a deep question to ask somebody, because I really think I got into theatre. I had a really tough childhood. You know, I'm a kid of Section 28. I grew up on the south coast of England in Bournemouth. And I had a really tough time in school. I didn't know who I am. I didn't know who I was. I didn't understand why the world was so cruel to specifically gay people is really where the hate was targeted at the time. I guess like so many people, you know, to become somebody else felt wonderful. And I think I was constantly trying to look through the eyes of other people to understand why they saw gay people as a terrible thing or a perverted thing. And of course, within the theatre and the performing arts, I discovered obviously other queer people. And I can vividly remember just before coming out, I read a play called Bent by Martin Sherman. And for those who don't know it, Bent is the story of two gay guys that fall in love in a concentration camp at Dachau specifically, and that their love in defiance. It's an incredible play. And when I read that play at the age of 13, I woke my mum up in the middle of the about 4 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, and told her I was gay. And so the theatre and my sexuality have been hugely entwined, and I searched everywhere trying to find other people like me, other gay people. And the only place I seemed to find them was in plays. And I read plays, obviously, like Bent. I also read a play called As Is by William M. Hoffman, various other Martin Sherman plays, and some obvious ones like The Normal Heart and Angels in America and lots of Oscar Wilde. And so many of those plays I would later direct in adult life. So how did I get in the theatre? Because I was desperately searching for other queer people. And I realised the work that I'm doing now, I'm still creating spaces for theatre and queer people. I'm just creating the thing that little me would have loved so much.
Mm. Were you in all the school plays, and then when you went to college and uni, you were just, your hand was straight up, me.
Yeah, I was actually. Do you know what, one of my very dear friends, Miss Jason, who's a very famous drag queen, who's no longer with us, sadly. His nickname to me was always me. I used to sing. I used to do a lot of musical theatre, and a big aspect of growing up as well is I was I did a lot of amateur dramatics. I was in lots of musicals. I was in lots of plays, and I did ask lots of questions. But I don't want to laugh at that, because I'm currently going through an ADHD diagnosis, and I think asking questions can be confused for attention seeking when actually it's just passion and curiosity. And I have never done very well in institutions. I went to three drama schools. I went to Brockenhurst College in the New Forest, and then I went to the Mountview Academy of Theatre Arts, and then the Guildford School of Acting. And you know, I had a really tough time with an institution, because I was fascinated. I've always been interested in how do things work and to challenge teachers. And again, I encountered quite a bit of hostility for that. And so in my own classes, when I do have queer people challenging me on practitioners and ideas and philosophies, I always welcome it, because I know it's so easy to belittle somebody for asking too many questions, when in reality, that just makes you a bad teacher if you can't answer those questions or you can't manage that student. And so again, very helpful things for me for what I do now in my rehearsal rooms and all the work we do at Queer Theatre. Mm.
It's always those who suffer most in the past, in their childhood, who make the best helpers of those same people later on in life.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're going to get into this within my hip, the questions you have later for me, but you know, I am an HIV positive man. I am I'm a drug addict. I'm an alcoholic who just hasn't had a drink or a drug for nearly 3 years. I'm a survivor of sexual assault. I'm a kid of Section 28. And all of those things, in a strange kind of way, I have to be grateful for, because they have become the fundamental things that the artistic director of the UK's queer theatre company has to have.
Yeah. So what you're saying basically is everything that happened to you in a real horrible way, and you've obviously had a struggle, you like where you are at the moment, and you wouldn't be where you are at the moment without that specific past.
Yeah, I mean, I it's taken a lot of maturing in my life to realize this, but I call it growing pains. You know, when things aren't going the way that I necessarily want them to be, or when I get a text message with news that I don't want to hear, you know, it's very easy for me to just sit in resentment as a victim and do nothing about it. But what I have learned is even in the very worst days of my life, there is a lesson that will help me grow. You know, I've had some people say to me, you know, when I talk about the sexual assaults in my life, when I talk about the harm that has come my way, you know, it's spiritually introduced me to a way of living my life that brings me such peace and enables me to be so helpful to my community. Mm. And so I have to be grateful for the bad and the good. And I think as queer people, so often, you know, we think, I want to come out so I can have the perfect life. And that's a lovely ideal, but it's an unreasonable expectation of life to give you everything that you want. And here's the thing. For many, many years in my life, I was getting exactly what I quote unquote wanted. And it nearly killed me.
Mm. Indeed. That's I really believe that that is quite a lot of people's lives who end up, those people who end up helping people with drug problems, with alcohol problems, with sexual abuse. The best people have been through that. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to see that you've had such a positive outlook after that negativity and using that energy to put back into helping.
Well, I had to learn those tools. You know, I didn't have them before, and I don't think I knew how to deal with my big feelings, how to deal with a brain that, you know, my nightly cry for so many years of my life was, I hate myself, I hate my life, nobody likes me, nobody wants me around. And what I have to remember is my brain lies to me. And as somebody who came through the performing arts, who is always taught, you know, go with your instincts, you know, listen to what your body and your mind is telling you, I have to remember that I've got a brain that wants me dead. And so I have to learn how to not listen to that or to pick up various tools to get in the way of that. And sadly, as a queer person, the only tools that I was really ever shown to deal with a tough week bad news or stress was sex, drugs and alcohol. And, you know, drugs and alcohol work really well for a bit. The way that addiction works is it goes, yeah, I'll just have this line, use this needle, take this drink, like, you know, just have a blowout this weekend. But over 15, 20 years, the way that addiction works, addiction doesn't just go, and that's all you'll need. You'll just need a bump of this thing or a key of this thing or half a glass of this or just a shot of that. Like, that will always, always increase and increase, and our dependency will get bigger. And then it gets to a stage where, like in my case, I found myself waking up in a shed at the bottom of a garden. Two men had sexually assaulted me over a course of days. I was on the brink of a heart attack. I was covered in cuts and burns and scars. And even when I managed to get out of that hellhole and was on the verge of a heart attack, I was still scrolling Grindr after being assaulted for days. Now, obviously, I was in a form of psychosis. I was on crystal meth and GHB and cocaine and everything. But I still had this hole in my soul that I was desperately trying to fill with something. And the beautiful thing that happened after that was that I went into, I did lots of different recovery meetings. And, you know, every single day, taking myself to a space with other queer people struggling with drugs and alcohol and choosing unconditional love, whether they be the L, the G, the B, the T, the Q, the I, the A, whether they're on the left or the right, whether they are young, old, fat, thin, from this country, outside of this country, just this decision to show up for each other in these wonderful meetings, to share the madness in our heads and our hearts, and to pick up various tools, various books, with how to deal with our emotions, how to deal with our addictions, and realize that we are powerless over these things. Mm. And it's the most beautiful, loving thing. And to have the humility to sit in a room full of strangers and say, as I did, I need some help. put me on a path to sobriety, which I thought, like, I felt like such a failure. The idea that I couldn't drink or use drugs anymore just felt like such a failure. And yet I had never gone a month without drink or drugs in my adult life. And it turns out to be, it's the greatest gift I've ever given myself. But at the time I would have told you that it was, you know, how could I be a queer person without drugs and alcohol? Anyway, after a year's worth of recovery and getting clean and sober and working the program that I work, my friend said to me, he said, I wonder how you can be helpful to the rest of your community. Now, I had been a West End theatre director. I've directed all over the country. I've directed plays and musicals, worked with extraordinary people from Cynthia Erivo to Cassidy Jansen, various plays, you name it. It's all out there. You can Google all of that stuff. And I recognised that to be a theatre maker, it's hard enough to work, to find like your own tribe, plus this climate at the moment when we're just trying to, we seem to just want to cancel other queer people because they don't agree politically, or because maybe they're trans, or maybe they're generationally a different type of gay person, maybe they're a different, and we're just, there's all this infighting. When the definition of community is to sit next to people within the same community who might think differently and choose to still love them. Mm. And so I share this because I was reminded what community is. It is the decision to band together, to help each other. And I wanted to do the same thing for London's theatre making community. Mm. And so I went to my dear friend Jimmy Smith, who was the governor of the Two Brewers in Clapham, the iconic LGBTQI plus venue. And it was a place where I had been vile to people for many years because of how I used to drink and use and drugs being taken off me. And I'd cleaned up my life and I said, please, can I have the venue? I want to launch some acting classes for queer people, which were basically a space for queer people to express themselves through queer material, play games through a queer lens, and know that it was open for everybody. And then from there, I was thinking, well, what can I call this endeavor? And I thought, well, if I was going to call it anything, I'd call it queer theater, but hey, that name needs to be taken, right? The name's too good. Oh, it was just readily available in Companies House. I thought, well, the domain name must be, you know, £4,000 or something like that. Oh, no, what do I discover? I discovered that the domain name is 40 quid for 2 years. And then I contacted my friend who you heard from earlier, Sir Stephen Fry, and said, would you be patron? Expecting him to say, I'm far too busy. And he went, of course, it would be an honour. And so the acting classes started, and then I launched the Queer Play Reading Club, specifically because a lot of my trans writers, I had some brilliant trans writers at Queer Theatre, and they didn't really have a place to write and have their work read out loud and to get feedback. And so we launched the Queer Play Reading Club to bring in brilliant playwrights like Chris Bush and Francis Poet and Walid Akhtar and Evan Placey, Alexi K. Campbell. And we launched that at the Railway with our friends at Nick Kern Books. And everyone who comes to that gets a copy of the play text, gets work read out loud. We read a play together and we socialise. We launched the Outcast Showcase, a showcase of queer actors and queer writing that happens 3 times a month, where my members are picking up agents and getting work. We launched a Variety Night, a safe space for more alternative approaches to the performing arts. Again, just so people can get up, try ideas out in audiences, find out what works. And two of our members last night at the Two Brewers performed in a competition, and one got Miss Congeniality and the other won. And I think that's in part to the experience they got at Queer Theatre. Mm. And so what I've discovered in a long roundabout way is all my life I kept trying to do all the things that I want to do. And it led me to misery and loneliness and drugs and alcohol, just listening to my ego, the I want, I should. And it turns out what I really needed was purpose and to make my life about helping others. Mm-hmm. And when I did that, everything fell into place. Mm. And it continues to fall into place. Mm. Not without challenges, but I'm very proud of it. Mm. I'm very proud of it. And it's a lot better than where I was 3 years ago.
You're helping others with queer theatre, but it really sounds like it also saved you.
Very smart. I say that all the time. When people say to me, I could get quite emotional thinking about it, because so many people say, you know, thank you for changing my life, and thank you for introducing me to these people. And I say, hey, you lot saved my life. Every morning I get up with a purpose, a sense of helping my community. And I think in a strange kind of way, thinking back to that 13-year-old in Bournemouth, you know, I remember picking up the pink paper and seeing this man, Peter Tatchell, fighting on my behalf when it came to Section 28 and the marches and things. And I just remember seeing these amazing figures in the community. Indeed, drag artists like my dear friend, Miss Jason, who I miss every single day. You know, these community leaders that stood up, made sure that parts of the community were being heard and facilitated, and joy was being brought into their life. And that's what I want to do. And in doing that, hopefully passing on some of the tools I've picked up. Because let's say it as it is, like, we're dying. Yeah. We're dying. Politics is killing so many young trans people right now. Gay men and addiction. You know, it used to be I say this as someone with HIV. HIV and AIDS used to be the thing that kills us. It's done. It's just done, right? It's nice and, you know, we lost a generation. That's absolutely dreadful, and we should honour them. But it's not killing us anymore. That is drugs and alcohol. And there are forms of drugs, particularly in older queer people, who feel completely irrelevant now. And the only way that they can get any attention is have some drugs on an app and see who comes around and letting complete strangers into their homes. And ambulances are being called every single day, especially in London, due to the chemsex crisis. And we have to acknowledge we need to change as a community. We need help. And part of getting that help is fostering a community and fostering spaces where we hold each other close and we keep each other accountable. Otherwise, we've just got people that we shout at via the internet. Yeah. And that's not friendship. Mm. It's one of the loneliest existences you can have.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's bring us right up to date, Andrew.
Yeah.
And what you're doing with queer theatre right now.
Yeah. So I've just interviewed the gorgeous and talented and brilliant Jack Holden. So every month at the Two Brewers, I host a podcast. It's called the Show People Podcast. I've had guests like Sir Ian McKellen, Sir Stephen Fry, Pearl Mackey, Mary Mack. We've just had Jack Holden, and we have some really exciting guests coming up. So that's every single month, and it's a great way for us to fundraise for queer theatre as well, because we do that as a live podcast with a live audience, and so that enables me to put funds towards our projects. We have the Queer Play Reading Club, which is also every single month. I'm welcoming Caroline Bird and her brilliant play, The Last Stand of Mrs. Mary Whitehouse. We have Coral Wiley and her play Lavender Violet Hyacinth Hue. We have Harry MacDonald and his play Foam. And I know I'm forgetting. Oh, Jake Brunger's great play, Foreplay. So again, I've talked a bit about what that kind of is. We have our Outcast Showcase on the 25th of March at the Two Brewers. And that's a wonderful, diverse evening of different queer writing and queer actors, some emerging talent, some established talent. And it's all queer stories told in a queer space with a queer audience. And it's just, oh, it's wonderful. It's like a big hot bath of queer stories. And I love it. I've just launched something that was very helpful to me, actually, when I was getting sober, which is, I call them walk and talks, where I take queer people and we go for a great big long walk in the countryside. I don't know what it is, but as a queer person, I always feel like the great outdoors and I were incompatible. I think it's the sensible shoes. The walk and talks, we're going to go to Box Hill, Holmwood and Leith Hill, and Arundel. And yeah, that'll be every single month when the weather gets a little bit nicer. I'll take LGBTQI plus creative people. We'll go for a walk and see whatever comes out of our mouths and our hearts. And obviously, as we know, walking, it's great for mental health, but it's great for our physical health as well. And the thing that Stephen was talking about is a series of events that I call Lovey. Now, I don't know if you know this, but Lovey, the term Lovey, was coined originally by Stephen Fry. A lot of people think it's an old phrase. It was Stephen who used it. He came up with the term Lovey. I can't remember the term. It's something like a load of West End loveys up and down Soho or something, he said. And the term Lovey stuck for, you know, an affected actor. And so our first Lovey is a party for queer people in the performing arts. And that is for people in the West End, to grassroots, whether that be stage management, drag artists, leading actors in plays, musical theatre ensemble, I don't care. If you're queer or an ally and you work in the performing arts, then Lovey will be a regular party that we host. And I'm going to theme them. And I spoke to our members and we decided we'd come up with a theme of gods and monsters. So that can be interpreted in lots of ways. That can be Greek mythology, which is what I was inspired by. But that can also be folklore. Perhaps you might interpret monster slightly different. Maybe you'll interpret God. I don't mind. It's a lovely opportunity to dress up, be free, be in a queer space with other people in the same industry and foster connection. In May, I'm on holiday. I decided I needed to get away from queer people for a couple of weeks. So I've booked a little holiday in Gran Canaria. it's this little island off the south coast of Africa. I'm sure there won't be many queer people there. But whilst I'm away, my dear friend Alistair Buchan, who is a brilliant actor, he's been in The Mousetrap, he's worked with Jamie Lloyd, he was in Urinetown, he's going to be offering a Shakespeare masterclass through a queer lens. And then we also have our variety night on the 19th of June, which I spoke about earlier. And we will be marching at Pride in London, Trans Pride London. And I'm sure there will be lots of other little events that are yet to be announced. But it does mean that there is no reason for a queer theatre maker ever to spend a week alone ever again. Mm. Because on top of that, we have obviously our weekly acting classes, which are open to beginners and professionals. They're very, very busy. And every week I either bring in queer material or I come up with games that are great for queer people. And,
Keeps you busy.
Yeah, it does. It does keep me busy, but that's what I needed. I needed a purpose.
Yeah. Well, Andrew, we're running fast out of time now. So before we hit the stops, how can people listen to your podcast? Obviously, you've recorded it and people can listen again. And also how people can keep in touch with your theatre, how they can access all the multiple things that you've described. How can people keep in touch with you and how can people get in touch with you?
Thank you. So the easiest way, go to queertheatre.co.uk and you'll find everything there from what's on. Also, somebody listening to this, you know, wouldn't miss 50 quid or 100 quid. And you know what? It's that kind of money when people donate that makes such a huge difference to the equipment we can buy, the technicians we can pay. So if anybody is listening to this and you think, I love the sound of what we're trying to do in South London, then please visit queertheatre.co.uk and make a donation. That's the first thing that I beg for, because we don't get any Arts Council funding. In regards to following us, just on all the social media networks, with the exception of X, if you search for @queertheatreuk, you'll find us. And if you want to listen to the podcast, we're available on YouTube, Spotify, and all good podcasting platforms, including an episode with Sir Stephen Fry, which was the first episode I did with a live audience. So you can find us just by searching for the Show People podcast with Andrew Keats. But please, if you can help us, please reach out, get in touch with me via the Queer Theatre website. And if you want to get involved, you know, take that big step, come and jump in and make some friends and come and make some art with us. It's we've built something extraordinary.
Andrew Keats, thank you so much for joining us here on Shout Out. And all I'm left to say, I think, is break a leg.
Or a nail.
Indeed. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Steffi.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Hello, this is Shout Out News. Welcome along. Campaigner Peter Tatchell has warned gay and bisexual men to be careful what you wish for, following polling showing growing support for Nigel Farage's Reform UK party amongst gay and bi men. The survey carried out by the research agency More in Common found that around a quarter of gay and bisexual men say that they would vote for reform, despite the party's stated opposition to key equality protections. Mr. Tatchell pointed out that Reform has pledged to repeal the Equality Act if elected, a move that would remove legal protections for LGBTQ people, disabled people, women and ethnic minorities. He warned that voting decisions made out of protest or focused on a single issue can have long-term consequences for civil rights. Reform UK has also vowed to cut diversity and inclusion initiatives, restrict teaching around gender and sexuality, and prevent councils under its control from flying the Pride flag. The poll highlights how political loyalties within LGBTQ plus communities are increasingly fragmented, even as rights once thought secure come back into question. Here in Bristol, Green MP Carla Denyer has been bringing what many described as a reality check into Parliament on trans healthcare. Speaking during a Westminster Hall debate, Denyer described Bristol as a city with a thriving trans community, but said she repeatedly hears from trans people and families who are struggling to access care. She highlighted long waiting lists for gender identity clinics, a lack of support for young people, and the distress caused by ongoing restructuring of gender-affirming healthcare. Denyer warned that national reviews and policy changes are not abstract debates, but lived realities for trans people facing uncertainty every day. She raised concerns about restrictions on puberty blockers and questioned whether newly announced trial pathways would meet the scale of need. She also criticised what she described as a culture war approach to trans healthcare, arguing that community organisations, including those doing vital work here in Bristol, cannot replace properly funded public services. For many LGBTQ plus people locally, her intervention has been seen as an important moment of representation, ensuring that trans voices from Bristol are being heard directly in Parliament rather than spoken about in their absence. National debates around inclusion have also continued this week, with Marks and Spencer defending its changing room policy following a challenge from the campaign group Sex Matters, led by one Maya Forstater. The group argues that M&S should provide clearly defined single-sex changing rooms, citing recent legal rulings and guidance around the Equality Act. In response, the retailer says that it has for many years operated unisex fitting areas made up of individual, lockable cubicles, and that this approach has not changed following recent court decisions. M&S said that most fitting rooms are signposted simply as fitting rooms, rather than being designated by gender. The company maintains that its policy balances privacy and accessibility for all customers. The dispute sits in a wider national conversation about how equality law is interpreted in practice and how public and commercial spaces respond to social change. In news from Europe, there are growing concerns that far-right influence is reshaping policy on trans rights, and Portugal has become a key flashpoint. Portugal was long regarded as one of Europe's leaders on gender self-determination, but its parliament has now advanced a series of bills that would roll back key protections for trans people. The proposed changes would reintroduce medical gatekeeping for legal gender recognition, ban gender-affirming healthcare for the under-18s, and restrict discussion of gender identity in schools. LGBTQ plus organisations and human rights groups say that the measures closely mirror policies promoted by the American and UK far right. Campaigners warn that Portugal risks abandoning an evidence-based, rights-focused approach in favour of exclusionary ideology. Protests have already taken place in Lisbon, with activists describing the proposals as a serious regression in human rights and a warning sign for the rest of Europe. In international news, the United States, new research published from the Public Religion Research Institute shows that 72% of Americans support laws protecting LGBTQ plus people from discrimination, and that support for same-sex marriage has risen to 65% nationally. However, whilst a strong majority agree that trans people deserve equal rights and protections, public opinion remains divided on specific policies, particularly where misinformation and political rhetoric have taken hold. Campaigners say this highlights a key truth. Broad support for equality can exist at the same time as targeted rollbacks against trans communities, especially when fear-based narratives go unchallenged. And to end on a brighter note, news from London's East End, where Queer Brewing, the UK's first queer and trans-owned brewery, has opened its own production site and taproom in Leyton. Founded in 2019 by Lily Waite Marsden, the project began as a response to the lack of LGBTQ plus visibility within the beer industry. What started as a collaborative brewing project has now grown into a fully fledged brewery and a significant fundraiser for LGBTQ charities, with the company donating tens of thousands of pounds through its beer sales. After years of contract brewing, the team made up the leap to build a home of their own. The new tap room is open on Fridays and Saturdays, offering not just great beer, but a visible, welcoming space for the queer community. In a week dominated by heavy headlines, it's a reminder that queer creativity, joy and solidarity continue to thrive, sometimes quietly, sometimes loudly, and sometimes over a pint. Sometimes resistance looks like speaking in Parliament, and sometimes it looks like building something joyful and pouring it into a glass. That's been Shout Out News. There's more next week. I've been Terry Starr.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
For more information about Shout Out Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Well, if you're wondering what the tracks are...
Do you know, I was wondering.
Well, I'm sure you were.
I really was.
The first track was Ian Storm, John Laurent, Carl... Clarice featuring Paulina Vita. Also, we played Hoogle, Topic, and Rash, I Adore You. And Mike is Mind Chill 77 and Unjaps.
How strange.
Paputa.
If you'd asked me what it was.
That's my current favourite, Paputa. Love that.
If you'd asked me on the start for 10, it would have been Starter for a Million to get me there. But they are amazing tunes.
Yeah, I just love that Paputa. Lovely. I know it's in French, but
I thought it was Bristolian with your accent.
I'm very disappointed in Paramount. They've cancelled Star Trek Academy.
Why?
Well, the guy who runs Paramount is very right-wing. He's a mate of Donald Trump. And there was a gay Klingon in it. So this the first ever gay Klingon, and I think they had a head fit, so they've cancelled it after one season. Shame.
That is such a shame. That is a massive shame.
What a thing to have a head fit over.
We'll say he has a head fit over everything. Yeah. And there are so many wonderful queer shows out there. Let's hope that somebody else picks this up, because that has happened before.
Yep.
If in doubt, Sensei, Heartstopper, Queer as Folk.
Yeah, Sensei.
L word. Why not? Yeah. Love a bit of Bette and Tina and Shane. Stuff. Okay,
unfortunately, that's it for this week.
But you can catch past shows on shoutoutradio.lgbc. We'll be back next week, same time, same channels.
Until then, have a gay old time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.